I never planned for this to happen, intertwining a love of travel and property into a TV presenting job.
So how did you get to the other side of the camera?
When I joined Channel 4 at 18, I had this love of performing. I wanted to present. Dermot O'Leary was one of the kindest people. Vernon Kay, lovely guy at Channel 4. They all helped me, but I learned very quickly to I co-parent my children with their dad. And actually, I think as lovely as that is, it's actually really quite challenging because we've got two styles of parenting. Whereas previously when you're together as parents, you can sort of try and work together, but then it ends up being arguments sometimes and doesn't work. And now we're apart and we're parenting, it is really interesting.
When people ask you how you do it, because from the outside it all looks unbelievably glossy and perfect, what would you say?
There's a few things in my life that are changing at the moment, particularly from a career point of view. Mm. For example, Place in the Sun, I've done it exactly that for the last 12 years of my life. I'm going to be exploring new ideas, new projects, and that can be a scary thing.
I think this chapter of our lives is so interesting. For us as a new conversation, even hearing the word perimenopause is powerful because actually knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And we are allowed to change. How does it feel to think about a different chapter going forward?
I am really excited about the next chapter, and I think the reason why I am is...
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasco. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasco, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause.
I'm so excited to be joined by someone who's not only a familiar face on our screens, but also a passionate entrepreneur and advocate for living life to the fullest. She's best known for her role as a presenter on the hugely popular UK TV show, A Place in the Sun, where she spent years helping people find their dream homes abroad. Beyond TV, she's also a successful entrepreneur and podcaster with her own business and ventures in the world of property and wellness. She juggles her career with family life, all whilst continuing her mission to inspire women to embrace change, pursue their passions, and take control of their personal journeys. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Laura Hamilton.
Thank you.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
Thank you for joining me in my living room.
Oh, it's beautiful. Loving the interior design.
well, that is a high compliment coming from you.
It's beautiful.
Now, Laura, you are just absolutely legendary for being unbelievably upbeat on screen. Tell me, how is life really? How are you? How do you do that?
Do you know what? Genuinely, I am an upbeat person, and I think I get that from my mum, because I grew up like with a mum who got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis from a very early age, and I've always just looked at her and thought, God, what a role model she is. You know, she's just gets on with life, and you look at her hands sometimes and they're really like disfigured because of the rheumatoid arthritis where it's eating away at the bones, but she's like, do you know what, I'm cracking on, and actually this is not going to beat me. And so I've always kind of had that attitude of, if times are tough, I'm not a glass half full person. I'm like, the glass is full and I'm going to put a positive on a negative.
And growing up with a mum like that who wasn't well, do you think that shaped you? It shaped your outlook? You know, the theme of the podcast is grit and grace. Talk a little bit about grit.
I definitely, I saw my dad always kind of like care, like having to sort of look after her, and always like making sure she was okay. But she was tough, like she was tough. And I do think that definitely shaped who I am. And look, all I'd say is my parents have always been so supportive of everything that I have wanted to do in my life. And I respect them massively for letting me have my independence, particularly now as a mum with my own children and letting them grow and be a bit independent. I think it's it's tough. Like, it is tough. I look back on my mum and dad and I think, well, you know, when I was at school, I got bullied quite badly because I was headstrong. Even as a child, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to, you know, I was always in the school plays. I was really focused. I wanted to work hard at school. And there weren't many people in the school that I went to that wanted to work hard. And my mum and dad, I remember turning around to my mum and dad saying, I don't want to go to this school anymore. I don't want to do this. And my mum and dad were like, look, just get your GCSEs, finish, and then you can go and do whatever you wanted. And, you know, I did go on to do my A-levels. And I then said to my mum, I really want to go and work in TV or performing. And she was like, well, look, you know, give it a go, but just don't have any expectations, Laura. You might need a backup. But they were just always, always so supportive. Like, you know, go for it. And credit to them. They let me go travelling at 16 with
did
a boyfriend.
Did they? With a boyfriend?
Yeah.
Okay, I have a 16. Are we doing that with our 16-year-old?
I think it very much depends on the attitude of the child. Like, I clearly was always an old head on young shoulders. My mum and dad knew that they could trust me. And at 16, I got my GCSE results and I got on a plane and I flew to Portugal to meet a boyfriend and then went on holiday with him. And we then went to, between the ages of 16 and 18, you know, I went to New York. I was in the Windows of the World at the World Trade Center. I'd gone to Paris. We'd gone to Fuerteventura. And my mum and dad, you know, were like, Laura, go. Roots and wings, that's what.
Roots and wings.
They always told me, roots and wings.
So your career has spanned TV and being an entrepreneur. How did you get started? And would it be possible to get started like that today?
Okay, so I never planned for this to happen, intertwining a love of travel and property into a TV presenting job. And I'll come back and tell you how that happened. But from a very early age, I have always had an entrepreneurial spirit. I was a little bit kind of devious and naughty sometimes, how I would make it like work. For example,
you walked the line. You lived in the grey.
Yeah. I think I was 9 and I told my brother, let's set up a car washing business. But the way we were going to do it was we were going to get an ice cream from the 99 ice cream and then wipe it on people's cars and then knock on their doors and say, I think your car needs a clean.
It's cause and effect.
Yeah. So Luke was like, Laura, we can't do that. We can't do that. I was like, well, how else are we going to convince people that need the cars washing? So that we did that for a little bit. Then my mum and dad used to do boot sales and I said to them, look, I want to set up a little hair braiding business. Whilst you're doing your boot sales stall, I'm going to have a hair braiding business. And I was charging like £5 to braid like people's hair. And I think I was maybe like 13 or 14 when I did that. And I'd earn more at the boot sale doing this hair braiding than they were. Then I got into carol singing, but I didn't just do any old carol singing. I had like my tape cassette player and I would knock on people's doors. My dad would follow me around to make sure I was okay. And I remember like coming home from like this carol singing like 3 or 4 nights a week, literally like pound coins, like tipping them. It was just crazy. I was like, and I had this love of, I want to make my own money. I just want to have, I don't want to have to go to my parents to ask them for anything. Then when I was old enough, like 15, 16, I got a job in Stead & Simpson's in a shoe shop for £2.11 an hour. And I always remember my granddad actually saying to me, you'll always be all right, Laura, because you work hard and I'm never worried about you. And even when I got older, he'd go, what job have you got on? What, you know, it was just, he was a real model as well. So I guess the whole property thing happened from the age of 15. I knew that I wanted to get on the property ladder as soon as I could, as possible.
How did you know?
I
look at my children and think, are they even aware? Or do you think yours are aware because of what you do? Where did it come from?
My children have definitely got a hunger for like wanting to have their own money. Because,
and has that come from you? And did it come from your mum to you?
I think so.
Tell me about that.
My mum just always used to say to me, Laura, if you want something, you're going to have to work for it. Because, you know, nothing was handed to us on a plate. And when you've worked for it, you can stand back and look and say, I achieved that. that was all me, rather than someone just going, oh, well, there you go. And it's very difficult, I think, as a parent, when you've worked really hard and you've got yourself into a situation and you want to give your children everything that you didn't have, but actually it can be quite damaging. So I'm very lucky that I've travelled with my kids and I make memories with them, but I'm also very conscious that I don't just let them have stuff, because I feel like it's not appreciated. If they want something, I want them to work for it. And so, like, even over the weekend, Talia will say to me, oh, Mummy, have you got any chores that you want me to do? How much do I get if I do a bit of ironing?
Oh my God, can you come live here for a bit?
How much do I get for a bit of ironing? I'm like, Talia, there's some napkins that need ironing. And she's loves it. Her room, she's like, you know, how much do I get for doing this? How much do I get? So there's my daughter has definitely got it more than my son. Mm. I feel like my son.
I would say the same with mine. My daughter's depopping everything she owns, whereas that doesn't appear obvious to my son.
Yeah, Rocco's definitely like, oh, well, I'll just get someone else to do it. And then he'll say to me, well, why has Talia got that in her little bank account and I haven't? I say, well, Talia's done this, this, this and this. And then he'll go, oh, I got an Amazon voucher for my birthday. Can I trade that in for cash and put that in my account? I'm like, it's not really the
doesn't
same,
really
Rocco.
Like so you're 19 and you've been obsessed with property for a few years. How do you get started?
So I wasn't obsessed with property. I just felt like I wanted to get on the property ladder as soon as I could. And I was 18 and I was at Channel 4 as a runner. And then I left Channel 4 to go and work at a shopping channel. And the shopping channel gave me a permanent job in TV where
I
could get...
so you were mortgageable.
3 months worth of payslips so I could get a mortgage. And I'd worked in Sten Simpson from the age of 16. I went to work in Peter Jones in Sloane Square at the age of 16. And the reason why I went and did that on a Saturday is because that Saturday job in Peter Jones, Sloane Square had London waiting. So I got more money up going up there than I would if I'd got a job as a 16-year-old locally. Then when John Lewis Bluewater opened, I transferred from Peter Jones in Sloane Square to John Lewis Bluewater. And I was there from between the ages of, I think I was 18, actually, so maybe 17, 18 there. And I just kept saving, putting money aside. So when I got to 19, done a year at Channel 4, got to 19 at this shopping channel, and I think I only had like £5,000 saved. It wasn't, I mean, my salary at Channel 4 was like 11 grand a year. So it was tough, but I was living at home with my parents.
It was enough.
Yeah, so I had this £5,000 deposit, and this little flat became available on my mum and dad's street. It was a one-bedroom apartment. It was a little bit like tired, you know, that kind of tabby cat carpet and a naff kitchen and bathroom. It was £100,000, and my mum said, I'll come with you and have a look. Again, my mum was kind of encouraging
yes.
me, like that independence.
Yeah.
And she'd always had a great work ethic. Even though she had rheumatoid arthritis, she worked hard. And again, I think that was from her father.
Mm.
So we went to this little flat and I walked in and I was like, oh, I don't know. And my mum went, this is great, you should do it. And I was like, really, really? I did it. So my £5,000 deposit was down, £95,000 mortgage. Do I think that that's possible now?
Not so much.
Not as easy. And I got the property. So my mum and dad did help me out. My dad bought me a carpeted. My mum bought me a washing machine. And my gran had left me like £1,000 or a bit over that to pay for my stamp duty and legal fees. Bought the property. 3 months after I owned that property, the shopping channel went bust. I lost my job. And I thought, oh shit, now what?
Mm.
So I've got a mortgage. I'm 19. My friends are all at uni saying to me, Laura, why have you got a hat? Like, why do you feel the need to do that? And I'm like, well, I just wanted to. And I thought, right, okay, well, my mortgage is costing me £500 a month. If I rent this property out, I can get £650 a month rent. I can move back home to my parents. It's not so bad living with my parents. And then my mortgage is covered. I've got my foot on the property ladder. And that's where it all began. So instead of kind of thinking, oh, I'm now going to have to sell this place. So I let that property out for a couple of years. And whilst I moved back to my parents' house, I ended up going freelance in TV and thinking, this property game is quite a good thing to do. I need to save another deposit. And that's how
it started.
It began.
So how did you get to the other side of the camera?
So I'd always, as a
kid... Had you always thought, were you a performer?
Yeah. So as when we used to go on holiday with my parents, if there was a disco in the hotel, as soon as that music came on, I was the first kid on the dance floor with a group of kids
with the routine
around me. Yeah, yeah. And I remember my mum and dad, we used to go camping and caravanning when we were like 14 and 15. I'd rally up all the kids on the campsite and I'd say, we're going to put on a performance tonight,
yes, a show.
Of Blind Date. I'm going to be Cilla and I'm going to cast you all. And that's what I was doing. And I just, I mean...
You were directing and
absolutely.
Producing.
I then said to my brother, right, I tell you what, and this, how crazy is this? I said to my brother, you can be the cameraman, because my dad used to camcorder, like we know the old school camcorders.
Yes.
My dad would be filming everywhere we went, every campsite we went on holiday to, every hotel, he was there with his camcorder. So I said, Luke, that was my brother, you can be the cameraman. I'm going to start doing tours of the campsites. My parents have got footage of me walking around campsites going, welcome to the pool. So the pool can, like, and then like, look at the, this is the restaurant.
The pool needs a revamp. This is how we do it.
So at 15, I was getting Luke to film me, and Luke would be like, oh my God, like, what are you doing now? What are you doing now? I was like, no, come on. We'll just document
show
all of
reel.
This. I was doing my showreel. So when I joined Channel 4 at 18, I had this love of performing. I wanted to present. I actually was training as an assistant floor manager. So I was a runner and then training as an assistant floor manager. So I had the talk back in my ear and then I would sit.
Could you handle it?
Yeah.
Some people can't, right?
Yeah. No, it is it's an art and it is a skill. Yeah. I just got used to it because I wasn't having to talk back.
Yes.
I was having to just listen as to what was going on. And I think that training really helped me from a live presenting point of view, because you're just listening to this in your ear but not communicating back. But then I thought, I want to give this a go. I want to try and do a bit of presenting. So Dermot O'Leary was one of the kindest people at Channel 4. Vernon Kay, lovely guy at Channel 4. They all helped me like put together this little showreel, sitting in an interview situation like this. It was when a programme called T4 was on. And they helped me like film this, put this showreel together. But I learned very quickly to not go around saying, I want to be a presenter, I want to be a presenter.
So people don't want to hear
it. No,
they don't want to hear it. What would you say instead?
I just learned not to say that. So I got my showreel and I then just decided, right, step back.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn the industry. I want to know what everyone's doing. And I loved it. I loved being behind the scenes. Now I've got so many friends that still do it. And I think because of having that background, which is why I'm still very like creative. I want to come up with my own ideas. I want to develop things. I don't want to just be a presenter.
No.
So I kept it quiet. I learned the trade. And for 4 years, I was behind the scenes in TV, working on all sorts of different programs, having the best time. And then there was an audition in a local newspaper that my mum saw. God, I'm really making my mum sound like a pushy mum, aren't I?
No, you're not. You're making your mum sound like she is really an important person in your life.
Absolutely.
You had true grit. And we're all shaped by our families, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And that's a part of your story.
But
right?
You know what? I feel like I'm not doing my dad too much credit here, because my dad has had a really, really tough upbringing. His parents both died when he was 4. He was born in South Africa. He got adopted to a British family. His dad got thrown overboard ship in the Indian Ocean. His mum was an alcoholic and killed herself. And so my dad became a womble. My dad was Uncle Bulgaria in the Wombles in his early...
He didn't figuratively become a womble. He was a womble.
Yeah, so my dad's a drummer. He trained found a love of music. So I guess that's where my mum's very creative as well, but my dad's musical. So my dad ended up, the family that adopted him in the UK, they had a neighbour called Ted Taylor. And Ted Taylor, he's no longer with us, but he composed all the music for the Benny Hill show. You know, the
We all know that, yeah.
He taught my dad to play the drums. And they kind of took my dad in as a, like, you know, this next door neighbour, adopted little boy, taught him to play the drums. And then he ended up working in becoming a womble with Mike Batt. So he was Uncle Bulgaria in the Wombles for a couple of years. But his adopted parents said, and they're no longer here, Ian, get a proper job.
It's not a real career.
This is not a job. So he didn't have that support from his parents, because they were like, so he did. He went and got a proper job. He went to work for British Telecom.
That is a proper job.
And then he was, you know, drumming as a hobby and didn't really pursue like his dreams. So I feel like with that and him seeing what I'm doing, he really is like, go for it. You know, you've got to go for it, because I never had that chance to. Mm. And I think with my mum as well, sort of saying, you know, Laura, like, go for it. It's
so
both
she
of
clipped
them.
You out an article in the...
It was like the new shopper newspaper, the local newspaper.
Nice.
And they were looking for somebody to play Cinderella in the local pantomime. So I went along to this audition, and I remember at the time, I was doing something, I was working on Big Brother's Little Brother with Dermot O'Leary, and I remember saying to the cameraman on the shoot, I need a headshot. And he was like, what do you need a headshot for? I was like, oh, I'm going to audition for Cinderella and in this pantomime. And I think Dermot said to me, what? You what? Because I'd done 4 years then of keeping it quiet that I wanted to get into performing. And anyway, I got the part, got the role as Cinderella. And I met an actor called Nick Bailey, who was Dr. Truman at the time in EastEnders. And he said to me, what are you doing? Why are you not pursuing your love of performance? Because you should, like, this is mad. And I said, Nick, it's not that easy. I work in TV. People know me as an assistant floor manager. You know, yes, I'd love to do it, but where do you start? I don't have an agent. I don't have a showreel. I've, you know, apart from these few clips with Dermot and Vernon, it's not that easy. And so he said, well, just look. We did the panto. He said, just look in the stage. There's like a newspaper that you can look in. They have auditions. Just keep your eye out on that and just keep hustling and like it will happen. And I did. I looked in the stage newspaper. There was an audition for a kids' TV presenter on CITV, but they wanted five people. They wanted a blonde girl, a dark-haired guy, a black girl, you know, they're covering the demographic. You couldn't be too tall because you couldn't make the children look too small.
Ah.
You couldn't be too small to make the children look too big. You had to be able to
just
sing.
Just right.
You had to be able to sing. You had to be able to act. You had to be able to present. And I'm thinking, well, I've got no formal qualifications in any of these things. I'm just, in a way, I can do the TV stuff and be on talkback and sort of blag it, but I hadn't had any formal training as a singer or a dancer. I'd just done it as a kid on a Saturday school, and I got in. And that was the Fun Song Factory on CITV with Aston Merigold is probably the most recognisable one from it, who went on to be in JLS. But I did that for 2 years. And then from there, I went to Nickelodeon and became sort of the female face for Nickelodeon and was live, travelling around the UK, went to LA, interviewing on the red carpet, getting gunged on beaches around the UK.
That still happened?
Not anymore. Although I do get regular people contacting me on Instagram saying, can we please gunge? I'm like, oh, I'm not sure if that's a good thing. So yeah, from Nickelodeon. And then but all the while doing the property in the background. So even though I was pursuing this TV thing, the property was always there and I was buying and doing up and then, you know, looking for the next one and the next one.
How many did you
do? I never had more than two.
Okay.
Never had more than two at a time. And that was enough for me. I ended up selling the flat to my brother 10 years after I'd
bought
it.
The original, the 100 grand.
Yeah, to help him get on the property market.
Does he still have it?
No, he doesn't.
It's not still in the family.
And do you know what? He would always say to me, I don't get it. I don't get what is wrong with you. Why do you, are you never happy in a place? Why do you always have to buy and then stay there?
Is it about money or is it about change? Or is it about control or is it about newness? Or what? Or some combination?
I think a combination of all of that. So I always felt like it was a great way of earning an income from property, or at least, you know, sustaining the lifestyle. If I wasn't earning what I was earning in TV, I could make that up by property. I've always wanted to build up to financial freedom. You know, I want to be able to do the things that I love and I want to be able to achieve it myself and not have to turn around to my parents and say, oh, you know, can you do this? Can you help me do that? I just wanted to be able to just achieve it myself. And I loved the idea, and I still love it, walking into an unloved rundown wreck and the transformation, turning it into something beautiful. But I not only done that with property, but I did it with business. So I was 8 years ago, I bought the local village shop that was in disrepair, and it was a post office, and there was an opportunity to create a flat and a house around the development and subdivide the plot to build a new property. And I didn't know, I didn't have a clue how to run a coffee shop or run a post office, but I thought, I want to build a brand in my local community that won't only just create a destination, but it's going to drive interest in like all the property marketing material. I want estate agents to talk about this as a destination and make it, you know, property prices more, you know, increase. So I went in to this business, decided to set up, decided to become the local post mistress, which was...
I love it. Bonkers. Did you have a uniform?
No uniform, no uniform. But it was a business that I thought I wanted to build and create. I knew I couldn't be in it all the time because I knew that I was off doing my TV show, A Place in the Sun. But it was so important to me that if I was going to create and build a business, I knew what everybody did from the bottom up. And I would always be able to step in at any point if someone wasn't there and do what they were doing. And I just feel like if you ever set up a business, that is key because you're gonna get respect from your staff. You are a member of the team. Like even if you are the boss, the big boss, I wouldn't wanna walk into that place and go, oh, it's Laura, we're frightened of her. I'd want them to know that I was part of it. That was really important to me. So I became the local postmistress, recruited 8 other people that also ran the post office. After a year, the post office side of it didn't really work because the coffee shop side of the business just grew massively and became so popular. We had like 2 busy queues of people and it just didn't work. So I decided to tell the community I was going to shut the post office down. And they were like, well, you never planned on having the post office anyway. And I was like, look, these are the figures. If you want to run it as a community post office, go for it. Did anyone? No. So the post office shut down, and this was lucky because this was all pre the whole scandal. And it was stress. You know, we had like Securicorps delivering £45,000 of cash every week. It was like running a bank. So got rid of that side, and then the coffee shop boomed. And I had 24 staff that were in there, and I would often be in there washing up or behind the kitchen, and people would walk in and say, I saw you this afternoon selling a property in Mallorca, and now you're here washing up plates. Like, what's going on? But that's what I loved doing.
You loved the variety, you like the high-low, you like to be busy. What is it? So sort of focusing on you emerging into your 40s and midlife, as I feel we must call it, how does that feel and what do you want and how does that change your thinking about what motivates you?
Oh gosh, what motivates me? My children definitely motivate me, but they motivate me in a way that I want to be like my mum and dad have been with me.
How does it make you feel thinking about that?
Obviously it's a very different situation for my children to as it was with me because I co-parent my children with their dad. So they spend a week with their dad and a week with me. And actually, I think as lovely as that is, it's actually really quite challenging because we've got two
styles
of parenting. Whereas previously when you're together as parents, you can, you know, sort of try and work together, but then it ends up being a bit of, you know, argument sometimes and doesn't work. And now we're apart and we're parenting. It is really interesting. When the children come back to me on a Friday, it almost takes a day to get them back into my way of going, okay, we do this, we do this, we do this.
What is your way? How would you describe your way?
Well, no phones, one thing, is a big thing for me now.
Give me no phones. How does no phones work? How old are your children?
My children are 10 and 11. So we have a rule now that they're allowed them at the weekends, but during the week, absolutely no phones. I watched a really amazing documentary that Emma Willis and Matt Willis presented on Channel 4, and it just made me think, this is not good. I'll hold my hands up and I'll say it was actually my fault my children had phones. And the reason why I wanted my children to have phones is because I co-parent them with their dad. And so when they were with their dad, I wanted them to be able to reach out to me and communicate with me. And the same for when they're with me, I want them to be able to communicate with their dad. However, the biggest mistake I made is I should have got them a phone, not a smartphone. A phone that literally they can call and text is all they need. They don't need access to all of this stuff online because it is just so scary. But then, of course, you battle with they go to school and the other kids have got them. And so what is the right thing to do? So I just made this decision. Okay, weekends you can have contact on the phone. However, I keep them so busy, they don't have time to be on their phones. So this weekend, for example, like I took them to the theatre to go to see Warhorse. We were go-karting. My daughter goes to Brit School on a Saturday. My son has football. And then we had friends over and I cooked for 8 of my friends last night with them there. So it's like, if I keep them busy doing stuff, they're outside, they don't need to just disappear to their bedrooms and sit on their phones. And then like literally last night, I'm like, okay, Sunday night, phones go away, they're hidden, and that's it. They're gone for the week. So I did say to their dad, just so you know, they're not gonna have the phones during the week. I'm not being difficult and saying you can't contact them. They need to just not have this distraction. There's so much going on in their lives. And also there was something that I saw, an actor said online that I think it was Matthew McConaughey, he said that they didn't let their son have a phone because children form their personalities based on what they see. And if they're watching stuff online, that's how they're forming their person. I want them to form their personality through being with me and doing stuff, not by being influenced by what they're seeing on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, because that shouldn't be the biggest influence in their lives. I think my parents were my biggest influence in my lives, and I want that for my kids.
I hear you. I want to come back to you in 4 or 5 years time and see
how it's going.
It's really difficult with a 16-year-old, because also I think all of that is absolutely the case, and it's a big part of how they form relationships.
Yeah.
So hard. I don't know what the rules are, but it is really difficult. As you move through the children growing up and placing the sun, which you've done for a long time, and your entrepreneurial career and thinking about sort of Project You in your 40s, how does that make you feel? What happens next? Like where do you go? Because you've done so much,
yeah.
And actually you started doing it much younger than many people started out on their entrepreneurial and presenting career. What happens now? How do you think about that?
I feel like I want to educate other people, or like I want to create my own, continue creating my own things. I loved creating podcasts. I've got ideas creatively that I want to pursue, like broadcast ideas. So I want to carry on doing that. And I feel like building more brands for me. Not that I don't want to work for other people, because, you know, I feel like...
What is Brand Laura? Who is she? What does that feel like?
Oh, that's a good question. What is Brand Laura? I think I just want to be a positive role model, and I want to educate people that... Like, I do think it is really tough for women. We try to be everything to everyone. I know that I am, and I think that it's near impossible. Like,
can we have it all?
I think we can have it all, but not all at once. So, you know, I know that when I focus myself on my career, I thrive. I know that when I'm absolutely all in with my kids, like they are the happiest. Like, so you have that guilt of like, I'm with my kids, I'm having fun, and I'm trying so hard now, especially after seeing the phone thing. I put my phone down, I'm trying not to do that.
Right?
I focus on them. But I feel like when you focus on your relationship thrives. When you're focusing on your career, there's a dip in your relationship.
It's a three-legged stool,
it's
right?
Like,
and it's hard to have all legs on the ground at
exactly.
the same time.
So can we do all of them at once? No. Can we have it all? Yeah, but you have to be prepared that something is going to suffer at one time. It can't always be all of those things great.
When people ask you how you do it, you know, that kind of how does she do it? Because from the outside, it all looks unbelievably glossy and perfect. What would you say?
Okay, so I actually feel like I am at the moment, I don't know if this is of a perimenopause sort of
yes,
thing.
Yes, let's talk about that.
So
That you're 43.
Yeah, 43 in April.
And it's you're 42. Sorry.
But it's mad because I've always, up until till this point, I've been so focused, so organised. Like for me, half the stuff I do because I am pretty militant in the way I organise everything.
You run a tight ship.
Yeah.
I run one too.
Yeah. I've got my notes on my phone. I've got my, this is what's happening here. If it's not, if there's an email that pops up, I have to deal with it there and then. Because if I don't, it will just go by the wayside and then I'll be like, oh. So I'll write notes in my phone to remind me what I need to do. And I try to just be organised, like with the kids' stuff, the night before, their bags, their washing. I mean, they have an unbelievable amount of sports kits. You know, there's all of that to do. And if you keep on top of it and you're organised, then the mornings feel like they're so much easier because you can just get up. Like this morning, for example, I got up, got them to school. They were there for 8 o'clock. I was on the train at 8:32.
And here you are.
And here I am.
Looking perfect.
But I nearly missed the train and there's traffic and, you know, but being as organised as possible works. However, I will say, of recent, I've definitely been a little bit like, okay, where there's a few things in my life that are changing at the moment, particularly from a career point of view. Mm. And so there's a little bit of uncertainty and I'm here for it. I'm ready for the challenge and I know it's going to be fine. But I have been so used to, like, for example, Place in the Sun, I've done it exactly that for the last 12 years of my life. I'm going to be exploring new ideas, new projects, and that can be a scary thing. So there are changes that are happening, and I feel like I've sort of maybe in some ways fallen a little bit off the bandwagon. Like last night, I wasn't as organised with the school bags, so I was having to pack things this morning, and I didn't like it. And I should have done it last night, and I'm thinking, I know that's how it runs smoother, but I didn't do it. And then, like, there was a couple of weeks ago, I picked the kids up from school, and Rocco got into the car, and I was like, how are you? How was your week? And he had his phone on him. Because of the way we co-parent, we have to, on a Friday, transfer bags and phones. And he literally got into the car and he was like that on his phone. I said, I've just picked you up from school. I've not seen you all week. And you are just looking at your phone. And I was cross. I was like, seriously, I'm pissed off. I didn't say that to him. But I was
I'm
pissed off. You've like literally not seen me all week and you're literally like this on your phone. And he went, oh, what's wrong with you? Like, one minute you're happy and fun and we're doing stuff, and then you snap and you turn. And I'm thinking, do I snap and I turn? Like, really? And they were like, well, it's not just this, the phone situation, it's other times, you know? And I'm like, it's called discipline. Is it that my disciplines, the way I'm disciplining them changed, or am I a bit more short-fused? I don't know. Because you see, I don't have periods anymore, not through the menopause, but because of the coil, which I didn't know anything about, but my mum told me, you know, once you've had your kids, Laura, if you're looking at contraception, the pill is the pill is obviously one thing, but the coil is like actually quite good. And if you have the coil and then you go through perimenopause and menopause, it can really be beneficial. So I was like, okay, I'm here for that. So 10 years ago, that's what I did. So I actually haven't had a period in 10 years. So I don't really know what's going on with my cycle. But I still must have like moods, clearly, because my kids are telling me.
I think this chapter of our lives is so interesting. And it is about taking ownership of the next stage for yourself. And some of that is figuring out what's going on. And I think this whole conversation, which for us is a new conversation, even hearing the word perimenopause is powerful, because actually knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And we are allowed to change. I think for people who are quite structured, I am as well, strange things can happen when you think about change, when you think about doing things differently, because you're stepping outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
How does it feel to think about a different chapter going forwards for you? So if you fast forward me a decade, What might Laura look like then?
I am really excited about the next chapter. And I think the reason why I am is because when I look at my life and I define it in chapters, I can clearly see like how different those chapters have all been. And I guess at that time, looking back, then I wouldn't have thought, oh, I'm in this chapter. Now I can see it. I'm like, okay, I get that chapter early on, that's how that was. Then I went into that chapter where I had my children, I got married, then I'm in this chapter. And I have loved it. I look back on my life and I have no regrets. I don't regret anything. I think that you can't, because what has gone on in your life has brought you to where you are today and made you the person that you are. So I am excited for what's to come, and I do feel empowered. I do wonder how the menopause is going to affect me. But again, you know, trying to be positive about it. I mean, I have spoken to lots of friends and they'll say, oh, well, I've had brain fog, I've had suicidal thoughts. And I'm like, wow, okay, can that really happen? And obviously, you know, it does. So that's quite scary to think of those things. But I'm going to try and be positive and think, no, look, I'm prepared for the changes. I think as women, we're like, what we go through is ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, our hormones dish us a card sometimes. Wrap me up with grit and grace. So grit you obviously have in spades, and your mum had in spades, and your dad had in spades. Grace, when I think about grace, it's sometimes grace under pressure, or also harnessing the power of FU, which we, you know, often feel in our lives. What does it mean to you when you think about grace and being graceful and gracious, as you obviously are?
I think whatever's thrown at you, you know, to have human decency and be kind no matter what. I mean, I'm a big believer in karma. What goes around comes around. And so I always just think, if someone's going to say or do something like that I don't feel is right, I do take it. And I just think, and that's tough, because I do have a bit of a monkey brain sometimes. So I'm reading this book at the moment. I know you want to wrap up, but mind management book, which is fantastic, The Chimp Paradox. And it's about controlling like parts of your brain. We've all got the chimp brain, the human brain, emotional brain. And I think I've definitely got better in age controlling my chimp brain. And, you know, thinking...
Is your chimp brain
impulsively, before you actually sit back and go, right, hang on a minute, let's just figure out what's going on here and why they've done that or whatever. I think I always say to Talia that be kind no matter what, and I don't care what you look like on the outside, it's all about what's inside. If you can't be nice or kind to somebody, then don't say anything at all, Talia. And we regularly have that conversation. So I would rather, even though in business, sometimes you have to be ruthless,
Yeah. You
do. I think ultimately I have good morals and, you know, I'm loyal, and I just, that's how I see being gracious. So I think that's quite an important thing to remember, those things.
Laura, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us
God,
today for Grit
on.
And Grace.
I'm
not
sorry.
At all, you're perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time, as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.